Well, folks, you know what that tune means. It is 4 o'clock on this lovely Thursday afternoon in the great town of Carbondale. And you are tuned into Everything Under the Sun, the Sopra Sun's weekly radio program right here on KDNK, the best radio station this side of the Mississippi. No, the best radio station in the world. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, James Steinler. Today we'll be highlighting the page 5 story of this week's Sopra Sun. Pages of the Past, to share stories of the storytellers. So this is regarding an upcoming event, which we're going to hear a little bit more about from Will Grandbois of the Carbondale Historical Society here in a moment. Just highlighting it's an event paying respects to the stories told by the Valley Journal and the stories about those storytellers. So without further ado, my two guests today are president of the Carbondale Historical Society, Will Grandbois, and the one, the only, Mr. Lynn Burton, who was editor for a good time at the Valley Journal, also editor of the Sopra Sun, and also contributes quite a bit to the Sun these days, sends us things to keep in our coffers. So, Will, if you don't mind going ahead and giving a little rundown of what we could expect on the 19th. And, yeah.
Sure. Yeah, we're continuing our kind of panel discussion series, which are recorded for posterity, but also before a live audience over at the 3rd Street Center. It takes place at 6:30 p.m. Sunday, January 19th. We'll have, hopefully, if everybody shows, a panel of 5 folks from various eras of the Valley Journal. Just kind of representing the stories that they both covered and the kind of behind the scenes of the longest lived paper in Carbondale's history and the one that sort of came in the mid-70s and ended the drought. There was a very short-lived Roaring Fork Review before that, but the Valley Journal was 1975 to 2008, and that's a lot of time covered and stories to tell. It also corresponds with, as you might have noticed from that 75 figure, the 50th anniversary of the start of the Valley Journal. We're coming pretty close to the 16th of the Sopra Sun here.
It will, yeah, February 12th will be 16.
Lots to celebrate, and also the Carbondale Branch Library has been working on digitizing the bound volumes, or actually digitizing the microfiche in Denver.
I didn't quite, yeah.
Yeah, that's a huge process that's been great, and that I wish as the Sun and wish as the Historical Society we had managed to make happen, but I'm thrilled that the library has done that because it makes it searchable. It means that anybody can pull it up from home, plug in a keyword, find out what your parents, your grandparents were up to in Carbondale in the late 70s, early 80s.
They might be in Cop Shop.
Yeah, it's always a possibility. I looked my mom up right away, and yeah, it wasn't all the stuff that I expected, for sure. It's 1975 through 82 right now, and the funding is in place to get it through 92. So
that's right.
That's a really cool project, and we're kind of celebrating that. Unfortunately, there was a conflict. We couldn't do it at the library, which kind of works out because the 3rd Street Center has been a great host for our last few events and will continue to be our host for events in February and March. So keeps it consistent that way.
Well, thank you, Will, for keeping history alive and for honoring so much through your daily life, really, what the Valley Journal has done. I know that you use it, I wouldn't say more than anyone, maybe, but certainly a lot.
Yeah, Lynn Jake Burton over here is our probably the other person who gets those bound volumes from the library as much.
You can't take them from the library anymore.
No, you cannot.
Yeah.
You have to look at them, in the library itself.
Right.
They passed a new rule after one time I unloaded 12 bound volumes on a cart. And they're really hard to get back up.
Yeah, you know? No kidding.
So now it's you can only do one at a time.
It's also the only complete set, right? It's this kind of essential archive that – I mean, the Historical Society has some bound volumes. The Sun has some of the old bound volumes. But for a complete set, that's it. And until they're all digital, that's pretty nerve-wracking, I think, for a custodian of that.
That's exactly what Tracy Colassi, the branch manager at Carbondale Library, that's exactly what she said, was that it made her nervous that this was the only preserved canon of the Valley Journal, and therefore it's important to have it digitized in case anything were the worst were to happen and those were damaged. Even one of those volumes, that's a year of Carbondale history that we would have lost. So it's so cool. And this online database that's put on through the State Colorado Library, it's called Colorado Historic Newspapers Collections, is where those archives are now hosted and available to anyone. And like Will said, you could put in a keyword if you're trying to find any person who lived in Carbondale in the 70s, 80s, 90s, well, at this point, 70s. In 80s, there's a good chance you'll just be able to find them by putting in their name.
Yeah, I mean, the goal, I think, for a lot of those early folks at the paper, from what they've told me, was really to kind of catalog the whole town. I forget who told me. Maybe it was even Lynn. The goal at one point was to get every person in the whole town in that paper at one point, and they were doing a pretty good job of it until the town got too big. I think that was Pat, actually.
But I think it might have been Pat told me the same thing recently when I interviewed him, which I thought was great, and he said that he figured, because of how small the town was in 1975, there is about 700 mailboxes, or I guess at the post office, and so they figured, that at some point they're going to get everyone on the cover of the Valley Journal.
Well, speaking of the cover of the Valley Journal, the journal was lucky to have at least three, maybe four, really good photographers: Patty Berry Levy, Becky Young, Carol Craven, and at the end, Jane Bachrach. And I just remember off the top of my head a full-page cover of Brian Ezra when he was about 10 throwing a snowball at the photographer, you know? That's it's just bad. Week after week after week, there'd be somebody different on the cover that, you know.
Well, and such great, like, the black and white photos on the covers are just, and going through so many of the archives, they're beautiful. And your mother, Will, Becky Young, her photos are wonderful. Of course, the first photographer for the Valley Journal. And it's also, and it's mentioned in the article, but that's inspired what the Sopra Sun is today as well. We like to have that eye-catching brilliant photograph, or as brilliant as we can provide, right on the front, on the cover.
So, something else that's a carryover from the old Valley Journal is, the Sopra Sun also still does the Mother's Day edition with the moms and the kids, the babies on the cover.
That's right.
And that was Brenda Buchanan's idea originally. And it's good to see that tradition is carried on, with the Sopra Sun.
I'm one of those babies in 1990. Yeah. Will's one of those
I'm in the 91 issue, it started just in time to catch us. I think my brother, it was a little different early on. I do think, I mean, it's probably more forgotten 16 years in. But of course, the Sun is very much a spiritual successor to the Valley Journal. And as legally distinct as possible, because of course the rights stayed with Swift and I guess belong with Ogden now. The color of the cover contest became Spruce Up the Sun, which is different. It's not it's not a direct clone. And I honestly, no offense to the folks who came up with the color contest back in the day, I think it's better for kids to get to create their original art. But there's a lot that carried over, and it doesn't hurt that Trino Ortega, the first editor, was a former Valley Journal employee. It doesn't hurt that the third editor was a former Valley Journal employee.
That's right.
It doesn't hurt that Jane made the switch and was an essential part of the paper for years and years as a photographer. There's been some continuity there.
Absolutely. One thing that Pat Knoll, and again, just for our listeners, and if you haven't read the article yet, or if you're unfamiliar with the Valley Journal, Pat Knoll and Becky Young were the co-founders of the Valley Journal back in 1975. After a short stint at the Roaring Fork Review. Anyhow, so I got the pleasure of speaking with Pat recently, and he told me so many stories that I didn't get to make it into print. One piece of feedback he gave me was that he misses the police blotter.
Yeah, Pat, I hear you.
I want to point out that I am not the person that got rid of the police blotter.
No, I know. No, that was, I think that was us. That
yeah.
was, and,
it would have been a board decision, right?
I'm not going to go on record right now and say for sure, but I just thought that was funny that Pat mentioned that, and he said actually, Lynn, that you breathed a lot of life into the police blotter at the Valley Journal.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah,
it's the first thing Lynn had me do when I was interning at the Soper Sun back in the day.
Really, it seemed like it'd be really fun. We were just, and what I told Pat, it's like, do we really need to know who got a DUI last weekend?
I think the other thing that
he's like, yes.
I want to acknowledge this, that also the transition that happened, I think, at the end of Lynn's tenure at the Sun was that the police department went from having a giant clipboard of stuff to go through and the Sun having the opportunity to sort of go through and see what was important or what was humorous. Mm-hmm. To sending out a press release basically every week with their own assessment of what was the most important. I know I'm responding to a person who's not here. Sorry, Pat. But, you know, the question of, okay, is the police blotter a public good? Is it important for the paper to keep track of what's happening, on that front? Yes. Is it also sometimes simply treated as entertainment? And is that a public good? A different question, but both of those things are somewhat undermined by not having control over what gets into the police blotter if the police are basically selecting it for themselves.
Can I inject something about while I'm thinking about it? I got all these notes here.
Yeah, please do.
Speaking of Pat Knoll, one, he wrote some great stories for the Valley Journal, and one of them that I'd like to steal for the Soper Sun one of these days. One year, he did an article about a snowplow driver who he was part of the crew that opened up Independence Pass every year. And it was a long article, and the guy was funny, and he had a lot of good stories.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have been around Memorial Day. So one of these days, I'll go plowing through the bound volumes there.
And plowing.
Plowing. There we go. Trying to find that. Maybe I can pluck something out of it. But, you know, Pat wrote so many good stories. It was one of the ones that comes to mind is he did a long story on the Weaver Cemetery on 8th Street?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There was the way he tells it, there was a group of gypsies,
mm-hmm,
that were camped down the river or whatever. And it was getting to be winter, and one of the little gypsy girls died. So they gave somebody some money, you know, to bury the girl and, you know, keep up her grave or whatever,
mm-hmm,
you know. And that's the kind of story that, I mean, it would have been completely lost.
Right.
As near as I can tell, had it not been for Pat Knoll and the Valley Journal.
Yeah, my understanding, you know, what I've been told is that Ernie Gianetti sat down with my mom and Pat back in 1974 and said, there's a bunch of stories here that are going to be lost if you don't tell them now.
Yeah.
And they did it. They followed through. And I think Joe Corthell was the main keeper of that story and the person who would tie the red handkerchief on that cross every year. Yeah, there's a lot of those. I mean, and not all, were all they all stories that needed to be told? That's subjective. You know, my favorite classic Pat interview is one with Carl Hanke at a St. Hank that just goes off the rails in the second half. You know, it's the last like four questions that Pat has in the Q&A are just while Carl goes on to basically the international communist conspiracy to sap and purify our precious bodily fluids. Like, it's right out of Dr. Strangelove, and he just prints it and puts it out there, and that's Carbondale in that time.
Right.
Yeah, we were just lucky for the most part. And there were different eras at the Journal over the 40 years, which I'll get into in a minute. But when I was there from 87 to 2000, you know, nobody really told us, and Pat was there too, you know, nobody really told us what to do for the most part. Bill Dunaway from the Aspen Times owned us. We were called the Bill Dunaway's tax write-off. And you know, if we wanted to write about something, we did it.
That's what I heard.
And we had this, there was this guy around town. This would have been in the 80s into the 90s, Dean Harding. Mm-hmm. He was about 6'4", skinny, and he had been a driller on an oil rig, but he had some kind of accident, a real bad head injury, you know. And so you'd see Dean could pretty much talk, could pretty much think, but you know, you'd see, and he lurched around a lot, you know, and he sometimes had drool coming down his mouth, you know, and he liked women, and he would kind of tower over them, and he didn't like that. They didn't like that very much. But I was allowed to write the story of Dean Harding, you know, who is he and how did he get that way?
Yeah.
And, it was a story that I thought needed to be told, and I'm grateful I got to tell it.
Well, those are some of the best stories, too, and otherwise. And, you know, I think of the Our Towns and those stories that might be a little bit subjective. Do we need to know about this person? But otherwise, the, you know, future generations might not, and that person is a part of the community. And certainly there's some people who, you know, have done more in town, you know, who maybe deserve a little bit more ink, but there's a lot of those unique stories. So I appreciate you getting that in, Lynn. One second, just real quick for our listeners, you're tuned into Everything Under the Sun, the Soper Sun's weekly radio program on KDNK. This is James Steinler speaking with Carbondale Historical Society President Will Grandbois and former editor of the Valley Journal, as well as the Soper Sun, Mr. Lynn Burton. Will, you were going to say something?
Oh, I was just going to, you know, one of the things that I find the most sort of eye-rolling on social media is you post a story, whatever it is, whether it's the Soper Sun or the New York Times, there's always somebody on that with the, this isn't news, and, you know, that's not the point. You know, yes, of course, it's important for a newspaper to, you know, be at the town council meetings to do the investigative hard news. But that's not everything there is to tell. And it's not like the features come at the expense of doing those things. They both enrich the community and they enrich the people who get to do them. Right. If somebody has to, at least for myself, if I only in my journalistic career had been able to cover hard news stories, I would have gone completely nuts.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
The features are the things that sustained me. And I think they sustain the readers too.
Absolutely.
Let me throw in something here. Mm-hmm. Will and I were talking about this out in the lobby. You know, over the 40 years of the Valley Journal, there were different eras.
Right.
It wasn't just one group of people doing it for 40 years. It was several different ownership groups and, you know, several different publishers and other editors. I was fortunate because I was there 87 to 2000 when Pat was there. And subsequent publishers would not have published this story that I'm about to tell you about.
Okay.
I think Pat had been gone. And he came back, and it was the story was about the high cost of marijuana. Mm. You know, why is marijuana so costly
back
these days?
Back before it was legal.
Oh, yeah. Way. And I interviewed the Forest Service, and I interviewed this person and that person. And I think I put some marijuana leaves in my hand and shot a picture of it, and that was the art that went with it.
Huh.
Actually, I think I won a Press Association Award for that one. Another one that I never would have been able to get away with under other publishers was Ben Nighthorse Campbell was a state was a House of Representative guy, and from Ignacio, and this was in the 1890s,
mm-hmm.
and for some reason he just stopped communicating with the Durango Herald. He would not talk to the Durango Herald, which really bothered me a lot, even though I don't live in Durango. You know, it's the principle of the thing.
You should talk to the press.
Yeah, well, you're not talking to the press. You're talking to the people
mm-hmm. right.
that you've been elected to work for. So I just gave him a really, really hard time. And I can't think of many other newspapers that would have published that column, you know. Because, I mean, I didn't talk to him. I just mm-hmm. let him have it, you know. So,
yeah.
And that kind of thing happened, you know, when 87 to 2000, you know, when I, well, actually 2000, I got fired under a previous publisher. So that kind of activity didn't go on the whole time.
There is different eras, like you said.
Yeah, different yeah. eras. Yeah.
Right. Well, and I think, you know, and it sounds like Pat, and I know, I think it's a part of the newspaper editor, perhaps ethic, is to hear your writers out and to listen what they're saying and not always be the voice necessarily of authority, but being open to those different stories and having courage. And I think that's a big thing that I've taken away from this job is having a bit of courage.
I would venture, knowing Pat and Lynn, mm-hmm. that Lynn being a little bit challenging to the general public might have been part of what he liked about having him on the staff.
No, I think, yeah, that's, and I recall Pat saying something to the effect of that. We do not have too long left, so I want to get a couple points out. I like that, and Will had mentioned during our interview a couple days ago that he has the bookends for the panel. So we have Pat Knoll will be on, again, the founding editor of the Valley Journal, as well as John Stroud, who was there when they closed shop on Christmas. Christmas Eve is when they went to press for the last time for mm-hmm. the Color of the Cover issue, I believe. In 2008. So it's great that they'll both be there on the panel to kind of describe that change in those eras and how it looked a little bit differently.
Yeah, I think I've done my best to try to put together a panel that represents those eras, also represents different facets of the production process. You know, Lee Beck has the kind of ad sales and side of things on lock.
That's right.
You know, we've got Carol Craven for the photography. I've tried to not, I mean, obviously the three of us being editorial folks have focused on the editorial side, but every facet of a newspaper is essential. And so... yeah, let's acknowledge that, and I hope that everybody will have slightly different perspectives and stories to share.
Yeah, and there's just the amount of work and the intensive labor that also took place back in the day that we don't realize in today's reporting mm-hmm. From laying out when it came to laying out the paper and using mm-hmm. A wax board and waxing over the paper,
yep.
having multiple
yep.
pieces of paper, trying to hold them in place to get it right. Why am I spacing the word? But cutting and pasting. I'm thinking
typesetting,
dark room. The dark room, exactly. Developing your own photos. I do want to provide, if I might, just a couple of anecdotes that I learned from Pat about those early years, and the fact, and it is in the article, but just that. In the early years, they were printing in Craig,
mm-hmm.
And they'd have to drive every Wednesday night to Craig to drop off the flats and then drive back that same night with all the newspapers in order to deliver them themselves the next day.
Exactly.
It makes Gibson feel darn right close, doesn't it?
And I've done that haul for delivering for the Soper Sun, and it doesn't sound nearly like that. It sounded like... An interesting anecdote is those were also contracted. They were contracted workers with one of the prisons who were actually who were operating that from Canyon City, who were operating the printing press in Craig. I also just wanted to say driving into town Pat had pointed to a photo when they had first driven into town in 1974 after coming over from Front Range. Pat had pointed to this photo on the wall, which I wonder if it was maybe taken by Becky, your mom, Will. But he said that the first person they saw was Jim Darien, a cowboy, cowboy who lived on the second floor of the Dinkle Building. And he was the first person to greet us, said Noel. He waved, then we hit the end of the main street, turned around, came back, and he waved at us again.
Jim was a good guy. So Jim was still sitting on that bench in the 90s when I was a kid.
And then Pat finished by saying, so that's when we knew we might have found a home. Uh-huh. And so we're so glad that Becky and Pat did find a home here.
Yeah, I'll second that. We were lucky.
Absolutely. And Pat says that it's a hard job and that you only do it because you love it. And it sounds like back then that was even more so the case.
For sure.
Yeah, I mean, you were between delivering the paper, pasting it up, producing it, you know, working 50 hours. I mean, at the end of the week, you were physically exhausted.
Yeah.
You know, and then there was a chance that you were going to, on that weekend, you know, cover a sports event or do something like that. So it could be physically demanding.
There's a reason my mom sold out in 80 and left to Dolores for a year.
Yeah, and it sounds like your mom and Pat both kind of came and went, and you know, but both did a significant amount of time for the, what was it, almost 30 years? Or is it more than that? 1975, 2008.
33 years.
33 years. Oh, my goodness. Well, folks, we are coming on towards the end of our show. We have about a minute left. So before I let you go, a reminder to make your way to the Third Street Center, the Callaway Room, on January 19th for the Historical Society Speaker Series. This on the 19th, Pages of the Past will highlight the wonderful work of the Valley Journal. You'll get some very fun, hilarious anecdotes. You'll learn a lot about what it used to take to put out a weekly newspaper, and you'll hear from some lovely people who have helped make this community. And thank you, Will.
Looking forward to it.
Thank you, Lynn, so much for being part of it and for still being a part of the Soap with Sun today. We appreciate you both.